Thibodeau was out hunting one day, and the game warden came up and caught him red-handed and said, "Oh, Kuya, I've been waiting this a long time. I caught you red-handed. You killed him 4 brown pelicans. That's the state bird of Louisiana. You can't be killing those. I'm going to run you in, Thibodeau." He said, "Man, Mr. Game Warden, I just got to feed my family. I didn't know I couldn't kill that brown pelican." Game Warden said, "I'm going to have mercy on you, but don't do that no more." He said, "But I got to ask you one question. What do a brown pelican taste like?" He said, "Well, tastes about like a cross between whooping crane and a bald eagle." Speaking of animals, I had a literature professor one time who, we were reading a poem by one of those romantic poets, and swan was referenced, and he mentioned that it was a reference to being white, because he said all swans are white. And he kept making reference to that. After class, I went to him, I said, "Doc, I don't believe all swans are white. I believe there are black swans." He says, "No, all swans are white." That's before the internet. I was actually able to find a picture of swans, and some were black and some were white. So I took it to him. I said, "Look, see, there are black swans and white swans." He said, "No." He said, "Those black ones aren't swans. All swans are white." I realized he had incorporated into his life the definition that all swans are white. And so if he saw something that was not white, it wasn't a swan. Now, speaking of definitions, you see, how we think certain words mean will dictate how they're incorporated in our lives. So Don was referring to the fact that sometimes it's hard to incorporate things we know into our lives. This is because we don't know the correct definition. We're going through the book of Hebrews, and we have seen, as you'll recall, a lot of misconceptions that we have about the Christian life. Passage today, Hebrews 11, is another misconception I'm sure we all have. And this may be a shocking misconception that we have, and it's about faith itself. What is faith? And I can almost guarantee you all of us have the wrong idea of what faith is, and for that reason, we have a very hard time incorporating it into our lives. Hebrews 11:1 begins with the definition of faith, and let me tell you, it's going to surprise us, because it's not at all what we think. Let me just summarize some of the misconceptions that I think we have about faith. First, here's a misconception. Faith is something we feel. Faith is how strongly we feel something. So if we feel discouraged or low about how things are working out or going to work out, we would say we have weak faith. If we feel very strongly, we have very positive feelings that things will work out, we call that strong faith. That's very ingrained in us. I assure you it's wrong. Here's a misconception. Faith is something we believe that's contrary to evidence. I think that's ingrained in us, and it's wrong. How about, here's a strong misconception. Faith is something we need more of. And faith is something we need to ask God to increase. Well, that sounds very right, doesn't it? It's not. How about this misconception? Faith determines how God interacts in our life. I bet we all think that. Strong faith makes God's hand move, and weak faith hinders God's hand. It's probably very ingrained in us, and it's wrong. How about if we have strong faith, it pleases God? If we have weak faith, it displeases God. That's wrong. A lot of misconceptions. I think we can sum it up this way. Faith in our mind... I'll stop accusing you. Faith in my mind is how strongly I believe that God will do things in my life, and that's wrong. Hebrews chapter 11 gives a clear definition of faith, or a clear picture of faith in two ways. The first way we get a picture of faith in Hebrews 11 is that the passage begins with a clear definition of faith. Again, let me warn you, it's not at all what we think. Secondly, there are several examples given in Hebrews 11. It's called the honor roll of faith, the hall of fame of faith, people of great faith. Now, what's interesting about this list, we're going to look through this list today and see several people who are called heroes of faith, but their faith varied widely. However, their lives are perfect illustrations of the definition of faith we're going to see. So let me go ahead and give you the definition of faith. And when I show you this definition, I want you to notice something certainly seems to be missing from this definition. Hebrews 11:1. Now faith is... Interrupt this message for an important announcement. The sentence there begins with the word is. And that's important. In Greek, whenever a sentence begins with the word is, that means a formal definition is to follow. So that means we don't expect to see a description of faith, something about faith. The sentence begins with the word is, and that means we're going to see a clear definition of faith. And again, I keep emphasizing this because I'm warning you, this definition I'm about to read you will not make any sense at all, and it's nothing we think faith is. 11:1. Faith is, here's the way it's translated normally, faith is the assurance of the things hoped for. Yes, that's what I would think. It's how strongly I believe, my deep conviction, it's my assurance that God will work things out in my life. But that's not what it says. What it says is, faith is the foundation, not the assurance. Oh, see the difference? It's got nothing to do with how assured I am of something. It is the foundation. And it's not things hoped for. Here's what it says. Faith is the foundation of that which is certain. Now, at this point, we say, well, where do my feelings come in? And if you see that they're missing, you're right. Faith is the foundation of that which is certain. Now, in the passage today, I'm going to show you three things. What's certain? Well, everything's certain. Three things specifically. One, that God is, that God exists. Two, God created the universe out of nothing. And three, for a believer, faith is not what we feel. It's the certainty of the foundation that God will work things out in our lives. All right, so again, that doesn't make sense, does it? How can that be faith? Faith is the foundation, the certainty that God will work things out correctly in my life. That's faith. Now, so faith is not how strongly I feel that God will work those things out in my life. Faith is not how strongly I feel that there's a foundation, a solid foundation in my life. Faith is that foundation. All right, so far in this definition, where are our thoughts and where's our feelings? And it's not there. The second line develops the definition. It's translated, faith is the conviction of things not seen. Again, the translators did that because they thought, well, it's got to mean that. It has to mean how strongly I feel something. That's not what it says, though. It says, faith is the substance of the things not seen. Or we could translate it, faith is the proof of the things not seen. I think I prefer substance. So you see now, for a believer, our faith is not how strongly we believe God will work those things out in our life. Faith is the fact that He will. Not my assurance that He will, not my conviction, the substance that He will. I don't normally look through commentaries. I don't like them. I browsed through some this week because I thought, how do people interpret what we just read? Because it doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Well, they all take the view that faith is how strongly we feel things. Well, I rejected those because that's not what it says. I went back further to the early church fathers. They knew what it said. And I felt very good that they didn't understand it. Because I don't either. So if you do, tell me, and I guess we'll meet again next Sunday. Actually, all we have to do, first thing, I decided I'm going to give up trying to understand it. I'm just going to take at face value what it says. Take face value what the definition says, and that will shake our whole definition of faith. But here's what he's saying. You see, I tend to think of faith with different imagery. Like I'm out in the middle of the ocean, treading water, and I got a life raft. Now, in my mind, my faith is how strongly I believe that life raft will hold me. No, according to this definition, the raft is the faith. Or I'm out on a storm-tossed sea, in a boat that's about to go down. There's an island not far away, a safe island. Now, in my mind, faith is my how strongly I believe I'll make it to that island. No. According to the definition, the island is the faith. It's not what we think about what God will do. It's the certainty, it's the substance that He will. We're going to build on that. Before we do, I want to pause and ask you, does everybody understand? Now, first, I know you don't understand because I don't either. If you do, then I'm going to call you up here and I'm just going to go sit down. I just want to know, do you understand what He's saying?
It's not what we do, it's what is.
It's what is. So far, we have seen no component whatsoever involving how we feel about things. It's not... See, I tend to think it's how strongly I believe that, one, God will see me through to the end, and in every situation of life, every trial and difficulty and pressure situation, God will work it out for my good. I tend to think that how strongly I believe that is my faith. My faith is my assurance that He will do that. The definition of the Bible says faith is the fact that He will. Now, again, where's the human element so far? So far there isn't any. Now, I want to tell you, there is a human element to faith, and we're going to see it today. But we have to begin by understanding that that human element is so small, it does not even make it into the definition of faith. That's how small our human faith is. So, for us to understand what faith is, first He does one thing. He gives us this definition, which I'm sure He knows we don't get. It's not how strongly I believe God will do something. It's the certainty that He will. That's faith. And then He gives us several examples of people who had faith in their lives. And as we look at their lives, that definition will start to make sense. And the examples are from people in the Old Testament. Chapter 11, they're called the men of old. Verse 2. Well, it's translated, "For by it the men of old gained approval." No, 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 no. No. That just reinforces our wrong feeling about what faith is. They did not gain approval because they had a lot of faith. It says, "For by it, faith, a testimony was established through the men of old." Now, three things here. One, their percentage of faith that they have did not make them approved by God. Their faith, the faith in their life, established a testimony. Actually, you know what's better than the word testimony? An example. The faith in their lives established an example. What does that mean? That means that weird definition of faith I just gave you, as we look through the lives of these people, their lives will flesh out that definition. Second point is, they did not even establish the example for themselves. You see the passive voice up there? "For by it a testimony was established." They did not establish a testimony through their great faith. Faith working in their lives, according to the definition we saw, gave an opportunity for God to show us an example of how that crazy definition of faith is going to work. And the third point is, the example of faith that we're going to see in these Old Testament saints was not how much faith they worked up. We're going to see they had a wide variety of faith. Some had crummy, miserable faith. Some had what I would call great faith. But they all are in the honor roll of faith. Why? Because they all fit the definition that faith is not how strongly we feel about something. It's the fact that God will do things right in our lives. So, we develop a definition of faith. And here's an example of faith that contradicts some of our misconceptions. As he's continuing to develop this definition. You see, I tend to think that faith is a strong leap of faith. In fact, that's why we have that figure of speech, isn't it? A leap of faith. A leap into the unknown. That means you go out not understanding. We believe things contrary to evidence. That's not even biblical. That's how people get caught up in error, is leap into faith. Believing things contrary to evidence. Here's the faith God's talking about. Here's an example of faith. Verse 3, "By faith we understand that the worlds were prepared by the Word of God." And it is worlds, not world. Isn't that interesting? It's plural. And actually the word means ages. We would say, in English, actually we would say the word cosmos. That means not just the space, not just the matter, the hard stuff we see, but empty space. Time. The empty shell into which the worlds were created. so that the things that are seen, I'm trying to change this somewhat to original, so that the things that are seen were made from things that are not. He's saying this. Here's faith. Remember, we already know something about faith, right? It's not how strongly we feel about something. It's the settled facts that God will work things out in our life. Well, he said, here's an example of faith. Faith is the fact that God created the universe. By the way, it doesn't matter how strongly you or I believe that God created the universe or didn't. It's a fact that he did. And really, God doesn't care if people have faith that he did or not. Well, he cares in a way. I'll show you in a minute he does. You see, that's faith. We begin with the fact that God created the universe. Matter, empty space, time, and very importantly, he created it from nothing. I'm kind of dwelling on that point for an important reason. Here's an alert. That I just described there, there's the human element of faith that God expects from human beings. And that's all. When God looks at the human race en masse and says, here's what I expect from you, human race, he says, I want you to believe that I created the universe out of nothing. What else does he expect of human race? And the answer is, that's all he expects. That's the human faith God expects. I'll show you how he develops that in a minute. But you see, God expects faith from human beings, not on a leap of faith, but on solid evidence. And there is solid evidence. God created the universe out of nothing. Old logical, mathematical laws, one of them is called the law of cause and effect. You know what that means? That means every effect had a cause. So you start with where we are right now. Did something cause all this? Well, yeah, people built this building. And you keep on going back and going back and going back and going back. At some point, you've got to come to an effect that did not cause itself. It's the law of cause and effect. Philosophers from Aristotle on all recognize that. There must have been what Aristotle called a first mover, a first cause. Right? If every effect had a cause, that means there had to be something at some point that did not cause itself. There had to be something that caused something, but in itself it was not caused. Stephen Hawking, years ago, wrote the book A Brief History of Time. Now, he was not what we would call a believer in any sense whatsoever. But in his book, A Brief History of Time, I believe this was written in the late 1980s, he said, the laws of mathematics and logic prove that there had to have been a first cause, which itself was not caused. Well, yeah, that's obvious. Well, now, he's fulfilling what Romans 1 says about people who know the truth but willfully reject it. Now he's saying, the universe created itself. Hawking just violated his own laws of logic and mathematics. You know why? If anything created itself, that means it had to exist before it existed. And that breaks another law of logic and math called the law of, here's a great law, law of non-contradiction, which just simply says something cannot be A and not A at the same time. So you can't have a universe that had to exist before it existed. Can't be. Again, philosophers, scientists, from Aristotle on have all acknowledged there was a first cause. Now, that's the human faith God requires. God does not require human beings in mass have great faith. They say, look, you believe there was nothing and I created it out of nothing. That's all he expects people to believe. Is that a leap of faith? No. Obviously true. Now, here's what happens. Anybody who responds to that, to what's obvious, that's enough for God. God requires so little. He will then take them to the cross. And then he takes over. Then if they accept Jesus' death on the cross as substitution for their sins, now he gives them believing faith. They don't even work that up. How do I know that? Not that I thought to put it in your handout, that would have been too helpful. But it's, it's in Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8. when he says, for by grace you have been saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. Remember what the word that means? It's the word faith. All right, so backing up here, God says, all I'm requiring of you human beings is that you look at this and realize somebody built it. That would be like calling somebody off the street and saying, I want to test your faith, brother. And point to this church building and say, do you believe somebody built that building? If he says no, haul him off somewhere and get one of those coats for him. That's the equivalent of the faith God expects of human beings. If they say, well, duh, yes, it was built, so somebody built it. Somebody looks at the universe and says, yes, somebody made that. Yes, and that's all I need. Stop right there. Now, come here. He takes him to the cross. He says, you want to be saved? Person says, yes. He says, oh, Jesus. God says, okay, here's the saving faith you need to be saved. So far, how much human faith involved? Not much. Now, what about in our lives? What kind of faith do we need in our life? And I'll tell you, only the faith that fits that definition. Not my feelings that God will work things out in my life, but the fact that He will. Very little faith, God takes over. Now, as we look at these examples, I want us to remember again, faith is not how strongly we believe in things we hope for. It's not how strong. It's not our assurance. It's not our conviction that God will work things out correctly in my life. It's the certainty, the substance that He will. It's not my feeling that He will get me to that island. It is the island itself. In my life, in those trials and storms, it's not my assurance that He will keep me afloat. It's the life raft itself. Now, in this list, we're going to see a wide range of patterns. Some of the people on the list, we would say, yes, wow, that's great faith. Some of the people on the list, we don't know very much about. Some on the list, we're going to say, you've got to be kidding me. This guy had no faith at all. We're going to see astonishing variety of human faith. All of them made the honor roll of faith. Every one of them, God says, didn't that person have great faith? But they will confirm the definition of faith. Here's the first on the list is Abel. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain. What do we know about Abel's life? Not much more than what's right there, do we? We know he offered a sacrifice involving an animal. We know that Cain offered a sacrifice of grain. And we know that Cain killed Abel. That's about all we know about Abel. But we know a lot about Abel. We don't know much about Abel, but we know a lot about Abel. We know he was a believer. And the faith he's talking about was not that he led a great life. It's just simply that he understood that when God killed that animal after the fall and wrapped Adam and Eve in the skins of that animal, and God told Adam and Eve that the seed of the woman would come, the supernaturally born child. They passed that on to Abel. Abel believed it. And when he went to the offer of the sacrifice, it was with the understanding this animal won't save my life, but it's a picture of Messiah, Jesus, who would come and die for me. That was his faith. Through which he obtained the testimony he was righteous. No, God established the testimony, because it really says, through which the testimony that he was righteous was established. See, not by himself, it's by God. See, God says, because he believes in my Son, I'm telling you he's righteous. God, and look at this, God testifying about his gift. See, it's God who established the testimony. And through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. I love that line. Abel died 15,000 years ago. He might have thought no one will ever know about me. 15,000 years ago, we're still talking about Abel, the first person. Well, first person after Adam and Eve, to come to faith in Christ. Now, what was his testimony? Was it his good works? We don't know anything about his good works, do we? On purpose. And Abel is one of those men, or people in the Bible, that very little is said about their lives on purpose. Their life is a blank tablet to us on purpose. So we realize it was nothing to do with what they did. Their faith was centered on Jesus. Here's a second example. By faith, Enoch was taken up so he would not see death. He walked around with everybody else, and one day he wasn't there. He was not found. I know one thing about Enoch. He had to be the all-time hide-and-seek champion of the world. And he was not found because God took him up. God raptured him. And again, remember, that's a picture of saints who will be raptured out before the great tribulation. Why was he raptured out? For he obtained a witness? No. His testimony was established that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. Why was he pleasing to God? Well, look at his life and tell me what was pleasing about his life to God. You won't find anything. Just like Abel, his life is a blank slate to us. On purpose. On purpose, God did not tell us all about Abel's life and about Enoch's life. You know why? Because it doesn't matter. Abel was righteous. Enoch was lifted up because he believed in the coming Messiah. It was not because they walked with great faith. Although, verse 6, he says, "And without faith, it is impossible to please him." Oh, that will preach, won't it? It won't preach correctly. Oh, but that would preach. Oh, I can imagine a sermon on this one. If we don't have great faith in our lives, we won't please God. That's where we get the idea that strong faith pleases God, weak faith displeases God. Well, we need to read the rest of the sentence. Because he defines what kind of faith pleases God. All right, if you want to have faith in your life that pleases God, here's the kind of faith that pleases us. Two things. One, he who comes to God must believe that he is. Woo. Boy, it takes a lot of faith, doesn't it? I don't know if I can work this one up or not. I got to believe there's a God. Whew. You have enough faith? Do you believe that God exists? God is? Okay, well, so far you're good. And, oh, there's more. And that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. How does he reward those who seek him? Duh. By being found. Doesn't that make sense? He rewards those who seek him. How? By letting them find him. Enoch played hide and seek. God doesn't. By drawing them to the cross. That's why Enoch pleased God. That's why Abel pleased God. That was the faith that pleased God. You begin believing there's a God. Simply by logic. Once you do that, God will take you to the cross. Then we can accept or reject. But if we want to be saved, then God gives us the faith we need to be saved. And in our lives, how much faith do we need? Well, enough faith. There's no human part, right? So far, it's the certainty that God will work things out in our life. Here's the next one in our honor roll of faith. By faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence, prepared an ark for the salvation of his household. Now, I'm going to show you again. In this list, we see a wide variety of human faith. Now, I don't know about you. I would say Noah, yes. If we're going to talk about human faith, oh, he had it. He's got to be the ultimate. Think about it. He's building this boat. He's telling him it's going to rain. It had never rained. He's telling him, what's rain? In Spain. There's not even a Spain. And everything was a plain. There weren't even any mountains then. What's this race? He said, well, water comes down from the sky. And, water comes down and then everything kind of lifts up. And just think, there probably, not only had it not rained, there had never been clouds. There hadn't been wind because the earth was tilted up. I'm getting way, way off here. That took what Noah did, building that ark, making a fool of himself. I would say that took great faith. Now, but remember now, some of these, Abel, Cain, we don't know. Some of them, Noah, yes. Now, third, though, we come to Abraham, and his faith is totally different than Noah's. And I love Abraham's faith because it certainly hits closer to home for me. I can't relate to Noah. I can relate to Abraham. 8, by faith, Abraham, when he was called, lived in Ur of the Chaldees, he obeyed. And that means obeyed. He did what he was told. How? By going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Oh, what a great picture of faith. It almost brings tears to my eyes. Here's Abraham living off in Ur. His father, Terah, was an idolater. He worshipped the moon. And God said, Abraham, I want you to leave everything now and go to Canaan. And he did. Sorry, I'm getting choked up. Actually, I'm not, because that's not what happened. From Genesis, we know here's what happened. He was over here in Ur of the Chaldees. God called him. You know what he did? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. About 40 years later, his father Terah, the moon worshiper, he decides, I want to move over to that land called Canaan. So he takes Adam, his father takes Adam with him. Like I said, and Abraham too. He took both of them. I was reminding you about Adam, who was his great-great-grandfather. So they had a son called Adam, not widely known, but I'm glad you... I want to focus back to Abraham, his brother, who's more important. Very, very small boy. Terah now takes Abraham up to Haran. And they wait there a little while. 40 years they wait in Haran. Finally, Terah dies, and Abraham drifts down to Canaan. God says, what great faith. That made the honor roll. I don't know about you, I would say that is absolutely ridiculous. But see, that's how God saw his faith. You know why? We cannot forget the definition. The definition of faith is not my assurance, not my conviction that God will work things out. What is faith? The substance, the fact that he will. So based on that definition, Abraham had great faith, didn't he? And so did Adam, his little brother. What was faith in Abraham's world? God says, I'm going to take you to Canaan. What did faith become then? The certainty that he would. Did he? Yes. Therefore, by the definition, Abraham had great faith. And let me assure you, God's not joking. That's certainly how he saw Abraham's faith. God sees faith as how he does things in the end, not our feelings in the interim. God says, I want you to go to Canaan. God engineered all the circumstances, but Abraham did land up in Canaan, and God called it great faith. Why? Well, Genesis 15:6. Then he believed in the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. What did he believe? He believed that Messiah was coming, Jesus. He died on the cross for his sins. He was righteous the same reason Abel was. Enoch was. Faith was the certainty that God would put into Canaan, regardless of how Abraham felt. Now, again, in our life, that'll take the burden off. You see, faith is not our assurance, our conviction God will work things out correctly in our lives. It's the fact that he will. Now, when he does that, you know what God does? He looks at us and he credits us with great faith as if we had really had it. Next on the honor roll is Abraham's wife, Sarah. Oh, here's a great picture of faith. Hebrews 11:11. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life. Yes, yes, yes. I would say that a woman who's 90 normally has stopped family planning. Normally. Pretty much. And then it says, she considered him faithful who had promised. Yes, I'm getting getting tears to my eyes here too when I recall this story. Because the angel appeared to Sarah and said, oh, even though you're 90, you shall have a child. And Sarah said, oh, verily, Lord, I doubteth not. Brings tears to my eyes when I think about that great faith. Actually, it doesn't. I'm laughing because that's not what she did. We go back to Genesis. Here's what Sarah did when she heard the news. Genesis 18:12, Sarah laughed to herself. Oh, there's great faith, isn't it? Saying, after I become old, shall I have pleasure? That means the enjoyment of having a child. Shall I have the enjoyment of having a child? My Lord being old also? Well, yeah, I would say a man who's 100 probably has stopped planning for families also. So, she is told the news. You're going to have a child. You know what her response to great faith was? Yeah, right. God says it was great faith. And you know what? He's right. It was. Why? Remember the definition of faith? It's not her assurance, not her conviction that God would do that. In fact, she didn't think that at all. It was not her assurance or conviction or lack thereof. It was the fact that he would. So he did it. So based on the evidence, based on the definition of faith, she had great faith because God did it. Doesn't that make sense now? Yes, she did have great faith. Oh, by the way, the story of Abraham and Sarah and Isaac clear up two big misconceptions that we have.
You notice that in their case, weak faith did not hinder God's hand at all. It didn't stop it. It didn't even slow it down. Our lack of faith is not going to hinder God's hand in any part of our life. How much strong faith we have does not force His hand, and the lack of faith does not hinder His hand at all. If weak faith hindered His hand, they would not have had Isaac. The second misconception that clears up is the misconception that faith is a leap in the dark. Faith is something we believe contrary to evidence. Now you would say, well, isn't it contrary to evidence to think that a 90-year-old woman and a 100-year-old man could have a child? Isn't that contrary to evidence? And the answer is no. We have to have the full evidence. Think about it this way. Remember the foundation of faith, that God created the universe out of nothing? If God can create the universe out of nothing, then He can create a human being from an older people. Back to our list. I didn't put all the list here. I want to tell you that there's a wide variety. There's a wide variety of what we would call human faith. All of them, God says, they have great faith. Why? Because for all of them, God worked things out in their life, and that is faith. Jacob, for example. I don't think I put these down. No, I didn't. I'm going to give you a list of ones I didn't put down. Jacob is listed as one who had great faith. Let me describe the great faith Jacob had. He had to get out of town because he's about to be killed by his brother. And on the way out of town, he stops and he prays to God. And here's a prayer of great faith. He says, God, here's the deal. If you get me to Haran and back safely and I'm prosperous, then you'll be my God. Isn't that a prayer of great faith? You know what God said? Okay. You know what God did? He took him to Haran. He prospered and brought him back. Did Jacob deserve any of that prosperity? I assure you, no. He and Laban were in a cheating contest the whole time. But you know what? What was faith? Faith was a certainty. He would bring him over to Haran, and he brought Jacob back. It's a certainty that he did it. Therefore, Jacob, by definition, had great faith. Rahab is listed. She's a great one. She told a bald-faced lie. God says, great woman of faith. Joseph. Hold on to that. I'm going to tell you more about Joseph in a minute. Read about that. Wide variety of faith. What we would call wide variety of faith. But God, for all of them, did the same thing. What He said He would do, He did exactly that thing. That's the definition of faith. It's not our assurance. It's the foundation. Hebrews 11:32. What more shall I say? For time will fail me. I know the problem. If I tell of Gideon, there's a man of great faith. He was speaking of animals, bark, 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 bark. He was a chicken. The Midians were coming to fight, and he's down hiding in a wine press. The angel appears and says, oh, you mighty brave warrior. I always thought the angel was joking. He wasn't joking. Gideon was a man of great faith. Why? By the definition. Gideon was a coward. He didn't think he could conquer anybody. God said, I've already determined you're going to conquer those Midianites. He did it, therefore he had great faith. What about Barak? Not that Barak. Barak, he was one of the judges. He was a great general. Oh, as long as Deborah was there telling him what to do. Samson, yeah, there's a great one. Marries Lady Gaga. Didn't do anything important until the end of his life. Jephthah made a stupid vow. What about David? Oh, a great man of faith, except take out those couple of pesky little things like adultery and murder. Yeah. Samuel the prophet, who by faith conquered kingdoms. Now, who would those be? Those would be Daniel, who became prime minister of Babylon in Persia. Joseph, who became prime minister of Egypt. Was it their great faith? No, it was the certainty that God would have them prevail in that situation. Performed acts of righteousness, good works, not of their own, but God sovereignly doing them. Obtained promises. Who would that be? Well, that would be Joshua conquering Canaan. It would be Jacob being brought back safely home. Shut the mouths of lions. That would be Daniel. Quenched the power of fire. Who's that? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Escaped the edge of the sword. Who was that? That's David and Goliath. Moses and Pharaoh. Elijah and Jezebel. From weakness were made strong. There's Samson. Became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. David, Solomon, Joshua. There's the honor roll of faith. Now again, as you've seen, What a wide variety, isn't there? I would not have called that an honor roll of faith. I would have called that the wide varieties of faith. I would have called it, here's the chapter of some people who had crummy faith, some had average, and some had great. But again, let me tell you, there are all kinds of the books of the Bible. There's not one named Johnny. For very good reason. This is the honor roll of faith. Because every one of them, every single one of them, demonstrated faith by the definition. Not their feelings, the assurance that God would work things out in their life. All these having gained approval through their faith, I think I missed crossing that one out, didn't I? Okay. What it says is, having attained a testimony through their faith, meaning an example. Don't look to how much crummy faith you've got. Look to the fact that God will get you to that island. Now, but they did not receive what was promised. Now, what does that mean? Specifically, Jesus. Because God had provided something better for us. Remember the key word in Hebrews? There's the first one, is the word better. When I look back at some of those Old Testament people, some of the things they did, I think, wouldn't it be amazing to do things like that? And then I realize we have the resources to do better. Because we have a better covenant. You see, think about their human faith versus ours. I'm talking about faith as we think of it from a human perspective. Didn't it take much more faith, humanly speaking, for someone to look forward to the cross, although they knew it was certain, than for us to look back to an established fact? They looked forward to it. Now, they knew it would come. We look back to an historical event, April 4, 31 A.D. We're better. We're in a better situation. They had to clean up. They had to confess before they'd go pray. We go directly to Him because we rest. Well, wouldn't this shake up our thinking about faith? Faith is not how strongly we feel God will work things out. It's the fact that He will. Now, haven't we seen a lot of misconceptions about faith? And one of them, remember, one of the misconceptions was, we need more faith. Now, I've certainly thought that many times. I need more faith. I probably asked God to give me stronger faith. I probably asked Him to increase my faith. Actually, I want to show you something. We don't need more faith. Show you something even more surprising. Trying to work up more faith will hinder our life. Luke 17:5. The apostles thought just the way we do. The apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. Yes. Oh, yeah. There are and especially during those pressure times, trial times, it certainly seems like we need more faith, doesn't it? And I'm sure I wish I had more faith. Certainly seems reasonable that we should ask for more faith. Well, Jesus corrects their misconception and ours. Verse 6, the Lord said, truly I say to you, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, that would be the smallest of all the seeds, you will say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Years ago, I heard the story of a woman in Austin who wanted to test this out. So she worked up more and more faith, lived out in the west side of Austin, went out to her window one morning, looked at the mountain, and said, I totally believe, I have great faith. Tomorrow the mountain will not be there. I have faith. And all day long, yes, I have that faith. Next morning she woke up, opened the window, looked and said, I knew it'd still be there. Now, this story is often, this little imagery is taken to say, if you just have that much faith, think if you had great faith. Actually, Jesus is saying, one, He's saying you don't need more faith. You see, He deliberately didn't say, okay, here's how to get more faith. He's saying, you don't need more faith. And second thing to notice, and this is very important, He didn't say, truly I say to you, if you had merely the faith the size of mustard seed, does He? He doesn't say, if you had just that much faith. He said, if you had that faith, you could leverage all this power. What He's saying is, not only do you not need more faith, you don't want more faith. Yeah. He's saying, not just you don't need more faith, He's saying you don't want more faith. In other words, mustard seed faith is the exact amount of faith that we need. So whatever you're going through, that crummy little bit of measly faith you got, that's exactly how much you need. Don't ask Him for more.
In fact, trying to get more faith would be unwise. And there's a lot of reasons. One, now remember, I'm sorry to say it again, but faith is not how strongly we believe we'll get to that island. It is the island. Faith is not, in this life, how strongly we believe that the life raft will hold me up. Faith is the raft. Now, if we think we need more faith, it doesn't make any sense. Because remember, faith is the certainty. Faith is the foundation. Faith is the substance. How can we have more of that? It doesn't make any sense, does it? If faith is the absolute certainty, one, God will deliver us through every trial in this life. He'll get us to that heavenly island of His. How can we have more faith than those certainties? But really, now I know what we mean. I know what we mean, though. When we say we need more faith, isn't this what we mean? What we want is, I want to feel that certainty more strongly. Isn't that what we mean? That's what we mean. I want to feel that certainty in my life. I may know intellectually He'll get me to that island. I want to feel that in my life. That's what we mean. What do we do with that? Let me tell you, don't even go there. Don't even go there. Don't ask Him for more faith. Don't say, let me feel it more strongly. Don't even go there, because here's why. If we try to work up more faith, any way we think we do it, ask Him for more faith, resolve to have more faith, trust in Him more, all we're doing is trying to conjure up some kind of human faith. All we're doing is working on our emotions. Now, emotions are flesh-based. When we work on our emotions, turn out, yeah, I will.
We're upside down. Remember, Adam was created in three parts: spirit, soul, and body. And remember how the blood of the Messiah, here's spirit, soul, and body. His spirit was the vehicle to interact with God. So he got advice from God. That spirit, his spirit, then transferred information down to his soul. Within his soul, he was right side up. His will ruled over his mind and ruled over his emotions. So emotionally, he was always very stable. Mentally, he was stable because by his will, he was connected to his own spirit, which in turn was connected to Holy Spirit of God. Ruled over his body, what he did. Everything he did was right because his mind, will, and emotions were directing him. They were under the authority of his own spirit, under the authority of the Holy Spirit of God. He was right side up. When he fell, he became upside down in every way. One, his body became the boss. Flesh, get my desires met. That became the ruling dynamic of his whole life. His body, his needs. Not all bad, not all evil, just get my needs met. Ruled over his soul. And now his soul is upside down. Instead of my will, mind, emotions, now his emotions are on top. Rule over his mind. What does that mean? How he felt determines what he thought. By the way, that's a picture of the unbeliever. We wonder, how can everybody's thinking be so wrong? The whole world's upside down. The whole world is out there where their emotions, what they feel, rules over what they think. And they can vote. So his body ruled over his soul. Within his soul, that's upside down too. Now his emotions ruled over his mind, and his will is a slave to his emotions. He does not have the will at the end of that system. Upside down, but there's something missing. Because when he fell, his spirit went dark. Now, I went a long way to make a little point, which I do sometimes. We can either walk according to our born-again way, which is original Adam, or our flesh, our fallen nature, which is fallen Adam. Alright, now, back to this thing about faith. If we start worrying about how much faith we have, increase my faith, give me more faith, all we're doing is working in this area right here on the emotions.
our emotions then take precedence over our mind, what we're thinking. And then what we think takes priority over our will. That determines what we do. So, bottom line, if we start worrying about how much faith we have, give me more faith, I need to work up more faith, we're working on our emotions, it will cloud our thinking and we won't do what's right. Trying to get more faith will hinder our life. Now, back to this parable about the mustard seed in the mountain. The mountain, actually in classical and Oriental literature of the time, always meant the same thing. A mountain was always a picture of an obstacle of a specific kind. It was always an internal obstacle, a self-imposed limitation, some problem, some difficulty, maybe some recurring habit, some issue in a person's own life that he could not get through. That's what a mountain was. So, he says, when you come to... Oh, by the way, those cause external problems to us. That hinders how we work with other people. It hinders how we do our job, how we do our things at the home, ministry, whatever we're doing. Those obstacles are there. And they impact our lives. So how ironic. Trying to get more faith just keeps that mountain looming even bigger and causes more hindrance in our life. Coming to it, to that obstacle, with small faith, mustard seed faith, come and say, I don't have faith. I'm not going to try to work up my own faith. My faith is the certainty that you are going to remove that mountain. You know what happens then? We stop interfering. We bring mustard seed faith, just that crummy, measly faith we have, and God takes care of the rest. It lets Him working. If we're trying to work up more faith, it will just get our emotions going. It'll influence our mind. Our will is then locked up, and we interfere with what God's doing. Proverbs 29:18. I love this. Where there's no vision, that means clear thought. The people are it says out of control. It says, what it says is the people are out of control. It doesn't mean running around like lunatics. Well, Congress, that would apply. But out of control means just literally that. Meaning God has a controlling influence in our life through the Holy Spirit. Don't worry about our faith. Let His faith, which is a certainty He will do things in our life, let that go. That is living in control. Don't worry about how much faith you have. Faith is the certainty. That's living in control. That's thinking right. Now, so the times when we think we have more faith, we already have enough faith. Why? The faith is what He will do. If we think that way, we'll think clearly. If we're not thinking that way, we won't think clearly. Now, how do we apply this? Well, I'll tell you what, for me, the best way to apply this is just understand that definition. Just go through life with a re-understanding of what faith is. It doesn't have anything to do with me. It's what God will do. It's what God will do. It's a certainty. So instead of saying, give me more faith, increase my faith, maybe we ought to say, thank you, I don't need more faith. Thank you that my faith is a certainty that you will work this out. Now, you may say, but some people do have what we would call great faith, like Noah. Like in that list of Hebrews 11. Some of those people, I would say, yes, they did. I would say, have great faith. Now, how does that happen? And here's the great paradox. If we live our lives applying that definition of faith, not my assurance, not my conviction, it's the substance, it's the foundation of what He will do. We live our lives that way. We free God up to move. Our thinking is right. We're not trying to force issues. And you know what will happen then in our life? Great faith will spring up in our lives. And that's how those people had great faith. Like Joseph, for example. Oh man, he did. I would say he had great faith. I guarantee you he didn't have great faith when his brothers dropped him off in that pit. I assure you he did not. And when he goes to Potiphar's house and gets cheated, lied about, I guarantee you didn't have strong faith. But see, people like Joseph and Abraham recognized that faith was a certainty that God will see the truth. They're freeing up, letting go,
not trying to increase their, they put their own faith into. You know what that let God do? That let God adjust their faith as needed. If we would go through life with the definition, it's not, faith is not my assurance, my conviction, it's the substance, it's the foundation, it's the certainty, we will find that God will then ratchet up our level of faith to exactly what we need. But we don't worry about that. We let Him do it. We rest in that definition. By the way, it still doesn't make sense, does it? But you know what? I'm glad. I don't want a God that makes sense to me. That means He's as smart as I am, and that's a scary thought. Now, as you see, we're going through the book of Hebrews. We're shaking up a lot of wrong thinking. I don't know about you, but I've had my mind changed a lot through this book. And next week, you talk about misconceptions. Next week, we're going to look at this whole issue of discipline. Father, again, we thank You for Your Word. I thank You for this powerful, powerful definition of faith, how contrary to what we think. But again, as always, it seems like every part of the book of Hebrews is the same lesson. It's nothing we do. We rest. We rest in You. Even for faith, we rest in You. We don't try to work up more faith. Our faith is not our assurance, our conviction, how strongly we feel that You will see us through this life and see us through every trial in life. It's the certainty that You will. So, yes, You take care of our faith. Above all, we thank You for Jesus who brought us into this better covenant. We thank You in His name this morning.